Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast contains graphic content and may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
True North True Crime is produced on the territories of the Coast Salish people.
At approximately 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon of Wednesday, October 11th, 2023, a single gunshot pierced the air at the Little Acres Mobile Home Park, located just outside of Sparwood, British Columbia. Two men working on their vehicles rushed towards the source of the gunshot at a nearby mobile home, only to find the door was being blocked by a person or persons on the inside. Eventually, the men breached the door and entered the dwelling. Inside the residence, a 21-year-old man had been fatally shot. His young life was taken from him before it really even began. In the wake of his death, his family, friends, and law enforcement are working tirelessly to uncover what led to the man's death. Tonight, we are talking about the suspicious shooting death of Joel Zimbalati. And you are listening to True North True Crime.
Hello everyone and welcome to True North True Crime. I'm your host Caitlin and with me as always is my co-host Graham. Thanks so much for tuning in, whether you're a longtime listener or this is your first time pressing play, we're happy to have you here. As we mentioned in the intro to this episode, we are going to be covering the suspected murder of Joel Zimbalati today. It's important to note that this case is still very actively being investigated and is still, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly new case. As such, the police and Joel's loved ones have had to be relatively tight-lipped on certain information that could impede the investigation or, hopefully, eventual court case. Because of this, we are taking the lead from the RCMP media releases. There were two men inside the mobile home with Joel on the day that he died. One has been named by RCMP, the other has not. Originally, we had planned on releasing the name of the second individual who has not been named, but have since reevaluated that decision with advice from a law enforcement source and the family. So for the duration of this episode, we will be referring to this man as JP. As stated, the police have made the identity of the other person who was present public. So we will be using his name, which is Joshua Freeman, and the alias Slim, which is his nickname, in this episode. We did work with Joel's mother, Toni Zimbalati, on this episode, as well as Joel's best friend, Chris. You're going to be hearing both of their voices throughout this episode. In their audio, they do say JP's name, so those moments will be bleeped out in this episode. We apologize in advance for the bleeps, but it's the simplest way to cut around those pieces of audio. This episode was put together using publicly available news articles, as well with the assistance of Joel's mom, Toni, and Joel's best friend, Chris. We'd like to thank both of them for taking the time to sit down with us and help us and our audience get to know Joel and what a kind and loving individual he was. As an additional content warning, this episode deals with gun violence. With that, let's get right into tonight's episode.
This case takes place in the southeast corner of British Columbia in the town of Sparwood. Sparwood is just 20 kilometers away from the Alberta border and roughly 30 kilometers away from nearby Fernie. It's situated in the Elk Valley, nestled between the Rocky Mountains to the east and the Purcell Mountains to the west. One of Sparwood's most notable features is the massive mining operations in the area. The town's economy revolves around coal mining, specifically steel-making coal, with several mines operating in the vicinity. Teck Coal Limited operates the Elkview Mine, which is one of the largest coal mines in Canada. So mining has historically been the primary industry in Sparwood, shaping the town's identity and providing employment opportunities for its residents. The industry brings a lot of people into the area, making large salaries in mining. Sparwood is also home to a pretty interesting roadside attraction. They have the world's largest tandem axle truck, the Terex Titan. I myself have taken a photo inside the wheel well of that truck. Now, in 1993, Teck Corporation acquired the Sparwood Mine and offered the Titan for preservation. The Sparwood Chamber of Commerce fundraised and then restored and now promotes the Titan as a tourist attraction. Now, you can find the giant truck located at Titan Park at 127B Aspen Drive in Sparwood, British Columbia. Sparwood is also known for its outdoor recreational opportunities thanks to its stunning mountainous surroundings. Popular activities in the area include hiking, hunting, mountain biking, fishing, skiing, and snowboarding. The nearby Elk River provides opportunities for fishing and kayaking during the warmer months of the year. Now, when it comes to crime, Sparwood is actually below the national average for both crime in general and violent crime, at least according to AreaVibes.com, which is why what happened on October 11th, 2023 must have come as quite a shock to the relatively quiet community. But before we get into the events of that day, let's first talk about who Joel Zimbalati was.
Joel Zimbalati was born on July 22, 2002 in Fernie, British Columbia. According to his obituary, Joel came into this world a beautiful, healthy boy with bright eyes and thick, dark hair. He was inquisitive from the start, and he had a knack for quickly learning anything he set his mind to. We asked his mother, Toni, to tell us more about Joel's early life.
I had Joel when I was 18, turning 19. We were living in Medicine Hat at the time, and me and his father weren't working out, so I came back to Sparwood to live with my mother, with my tail between my legs. We lived with her for about a year, and it was helpful. You know, she helped me a lot, but eventually I knew, like, I had to just try to make it on my own. So him and I moved into a little apartment by ourselves when he was about one. And that was probably some of the best years of my life, just him and I, you know, him and I against the world. He used to have this old threadbare rocking chair, and I would just remember rocking him for hours and hours, like, just thinking, like, looking at him in disbelief that I could love something so much, you know. And yeah, he was a happy kid, smart, so bright, caught on to everything so quickly. And he was happy just, you know, jumping in puddles. He was so easy. Everybody loved him. We didn't have much, but we had each other, and that's all we needed.
As the years went by, the family expanded, and Joel ended up with siblings. We asked Toni how the dynamic changed when it wasn't just the two of them against the world anymore.
Joel was an amazing big brother. When his little brother came along, Travis, they were so close. Joel was so patient with him. Travis took his first steps right to Joel, which I thought was pretty awesome. And they were so close growing up. Travis would follow him around, looked up to him so much. It's been hard on Travis, for sure.
Toni told us a little bit more about Joel's interests as he began to transition into adolescence.
Oh, water. That kid loved the water. Couldn't keep him out of the water. Loved it so much. Lakes, pool, river, whatever it was, he loved it. And he was so smart in school. Like, he always blew me away. But he was also a little bit of a class clown. You know, he liked to make people laugh. He liked to write off-the-wall stories. One time he put a squash in the boys' bathroom toilet. Yeah. So I got a call from the school, and after I got off the phone and he came home from school, I was like, seriously? Seriously? Why? Why would you do that? They were so mad about it. I was like, oh my God. Just things like that, you know. He liked quadding and riding his bike, fishing a little bit, hunting, you know.
So Joel was a typical teen growing up in the Elk Valley, which is essentially a giant wilderness playground. But there was one thing missing from Joel's life that seemed to weigh on him, and that was the presence of his father. Tony told us a bit about that period of Joel's life.
Well, when he was about, I want to say 15, he went to go live with his dad for a little while in Medicine Hat because up until then, his dad was never really in his life at all. So I think that was hard on him. He felt a bit of rejection there or whatever. So he did try to go live with him for a little while when he was 15, but it just didn't work out. His dad had 3 other children by then, and Joel just didn't feel completely accepted there. So then he came home, and I think that really stuck with him. You know, in his mind, he was hoping for this beautiful father-son relationship, and it just wasn't there. And that made me very sad for him, because I was really, really hoping that it would work out and they could have some kind of relationship, but it just never panned out.
So this was obviously a challenging development for Joel, but despite the pain of feeling rejected by his biological father, Joel pushed forward in life. He finished high school, and like many others, he didn't really have a concrete plan as to what his life was supposed to look like as he entered adulthood.
He did finish high school, and his plan, I don't necessarily think he had one. He kind of floated around doing odd construction jobs and things like that. He worked at Tim Hortons for a stint when he was like 16. And I was really pushing. I'm like, Joel, you need to go to school. Like, you're smart enough. Just do it, right? And I mean, he was only 21, so he still had ample time to figure out what he wanted to do, right?
So fast forward to the late summer, early fall of 2023, and Joel was in a position of relative stability and on the precipice of a new beginning.
Well, actually, that Monday before he died, or sorry, that Monday after, he was set to start work with his best friend, Christian. Super excited to get his life straight, get his life together, start working with his friend. So in his mind, like the week that he died, that was his last week to like party with his friends, like one last hurrah before he started working with Christian. And that kills me too. It's like knowing that he was finally going to get his life in order.
Speaking of Joel's friends, we also spoke at length with Joel's best friend, Chris. Chris and Joel have known each other for years and share a pretty special bond. Joel is actually about 7 years younger than Chris, and they met when Joel was 13 and Chris was 20. They initially met through Chris's younger brother, and their bond grew while Joel was there for Chris as a friend while Chris was getting sober from heroin. Here's Chris with more on that.
So I first met Joel when I was moving back in with my, sorry, that could be bad lighting there. When I was first moving back in with my parents after being homeless and addicted to heroin for years. I met him when he was 13, friends with my little brother. Kid was amazing. He would always bum me weed, always was there for me. He never bugged me about my past drug addiction, the fact that I was on the methadone program, that I was getting sober, just there for me. He bought me my first vehicle when I got sober. He was always there. When I went through my divorce, he was there. He was much more than a friend. He was my little brother. Didn't matter what I did, what my past was, he just loved me, took care of my animals. Fuck, sorry. He was one of the nicest people I had ever met. He just, as long as you showed him respect, he didn't have a mean bone in his body.
Joel's support through this incredibly difficult time in Chris's life has not been taken for granted. Chris lives every day with the memory of his best friend wanting the best for him.
I've been sober, clean and sober for 7 years. I did it all with his help, and I continue every day to stay sober because I know it's what he'd want.
As Tony already stated, Joel was in a period of his life where he was enjoying himself and enjoying being young. Joel had worked for short stints here and there in his late teens, but for the most part, he was still taking advantage of that time in his life before the weight of the world's responsibilities had settled onto his shoulders. Here's Chris with more.
Yeah, he was a young kid. He liked to party and he liked to do his things, but he was 21 years old and he had no proper guidance. So the kid was just living in the moment, you know? He just wanted everyone in his life to be happy. He was young and dumb, and I'll leave it at that. Everyone makes the wrong choices when they're young because they want to have fun, right? But it brings the wrong people into your life, obviously. That's why he's not with us anymore.
But Joel wasn't all young and dumb. He was savvy enough to save the majority of the money he had made to purchase a trailer at just 21 years old. We asked Tony about Joel's living arrangement before the incident.
So he was living in a trailer that he purchased himself because he was a saver. He scrimped and he saved. And he bought it himself outright. It was older. But he was so, so proud of himself. And he was so excited to show it off to me and his brother. My mother had died 13 months prior to Joel's death. And she would have been so proud of him. Because they were so close, right? Because she essentially helped me raise him for the first year. So those two were very, very close. And her death was so hard on him. And as hard as it was on him, that kid was so worried about me. He would call me every day. He would come to my house, make sure I have dinner. Like, he was so, so worried about me. When in reality, he was hurting just as much as me, if not more. Right? That's just the type of kid he was. He cared so much. She would have been so proud of him. And he used all her furniture and everything to furnish his house. And I remember him saying, Nan would be so, so proud of me. And I'm like, yeah, she would. She really would.
Tony then told us more about the neighborhood that Joel's trailer was situated in.
So it was, it is a ways out of town, a couple kilometers out of town, like a tiny little trailer park, probably like maybe 20 trailers. And he was living two doors down from his best friend, Christian, and right across from his other best friend, Bryce. So that was nice.
So Joel had his very own trailer in a small mobile home park just outside of Sparwood and lived just a few feet away from two of his closest friends. The trailer park itself only has 15 spaces for mobile homes, so it was a pretty good arrangement for a young man to have two friends living at the same park. Here's Chris with more about life in Little Acres Trailer Court and Joel as a person.
Yeah, so 5 years ago, he was living with me when I bought my trailer here, and then like 3 years ago, maybe, we sold him his trailer. That was the one he was living in. He was so proud of it. We just, every day, like, because I work night shifts for a contracting company for the mine. So every night when I'd leave for work, he'd rush to his window, flip me off, wave, tell me to be safe, and that he loved me. And then I'd get a text from him telling me, you know, stop in, come see him when I got home from work. And I would every night. I'd see him when I got home off work. Just go give him a hug. See how his day was. What he got up to that day. Just check on Eli. See how he was doing. I spent pretty much my days off just playing video games with him. In the summer, we were out at the lakes or at the river. Like, he just loved to be outside. Like, he was actually in the papers here recently, like 2 years ago. He went out hiking and some elderly lady had fallen down a cliff face. He fucking helped rescue her, pull her to safety with her husband. And just the photo of him in the newspaper, just holding his fucking, hey y'all, just shit-eating grin on his face.
So Chris mentions Eli in that pass, and Eli was Joel's dog who he treated like a child. Eli was a rat terrier Chihuahua cross and was blind and deaf. Joel loved that dog more than most things. And that incident with the tourist that Chris spoke about was reported in the local media and is available on the freepress.com website. It reads as follows. An 84-year-old hiker escaped serious injury thanks to the quick reactions of four local teenagers. Calgary resident Barbara Van Blomsteen fell while hiking at Fairy Creek Falls on September 4th on her way to Wardner, and wanting to take advantage of the sunshine, she embarked on the hike alongside her brother and sister-in-law. Barbara lost her footing on an exposed section of the trail. Not having anything to grab onto to stabilize herself, she began rolling down the hill towards the water. Local youth Joel Zimbalotti was down by the water when he noticed Barbara stumble, rolling sideways down the steep embankment. Immediately springing to the rescue, the group of teenagers with Joel scrambled down to help. Those kids were just marvelous, said Barbara. I was just so thankful. They must be really commended for their bravery. It was really steep, I don't know how they got down there so quickly. In my mind, I didn't know how to get out of there. My biggest thought was that we were all going to go down together. I was so worried about them. But they assessed the situation very calmly, climbed down, and managed to stand in that area. They were amazing.
We are now going to go through what we've learned about the events that took place on October 11th, 2023. So we know that there were three people present in the mobile home that day. First, there was the victim, Joel Zimbalati. The second person, who was named by the RCMP, is Joshua Freeman, who goes by the nickname Slim. And the third individual is the person who we will be calling JP. Those three were all hanging out that day in Joel's mobile home, and according to our sources, they had been drinking. Also present in the mobile home park that day were Chris and Bryce, and these were Joel's friends who lived at the mobile home park. Now, they were at the park, but not inside Joel's home at the time of the gun going off. We asked Toni what she knew about the events that transpired that day, and this is what she's learned.
So what happened was, so Slim, Joshua Freeman, was staying with Joel periodically off and on. He'd come and stay and leave, come and stay. I don't know. I never met the kid, never seen him in my life. But he was there staying with Joel. And his other friend was also there. And from my understanding is, it's hard to talk about, but we're all hanging out that day. And then Joel and went out for lunch. And Slim had stayed at the trailer. And then, oof, this is rough. They came back because Joel was shot around 2:30 p.m., right? So they went out for lunch. They came back. They were all having drinks or whatever. And so Joel's friend Bryce was outside in the driveway working on Joel's car. Joel's friend Christian was in and out working on the dishwasher, Joel's dishwasher. And Christian left. He went to his house, a couple trailers down. All of a sudden, he heard a gunshot. So him and Bryce go running towards Joel's house, and Joshua are blocking the door, not letting them in, not letting Christian and Bryce in. Finally, Christian and Bryce push past him. Joshua and get in a vehicle and leave with the murder weapon and a duffel bag. And this is all from what Christian told me, right? But I believe him. And Christian goes in the house, finds Joel slumped over a chair with a bullet hole in the back of his head, and called the ambulance, obviously. And he's checking for a pulse. And then he calls me. And the weird thing is about this day, and it's hard to even explain, is this whole day, from the minute I woke up, I just had this weird feeling. Like, I just felt anxious. The air felt heavy around me. Like, something was off, right? And I couldn't pinpoint it, obviously, but something was just weird. And I even called in sick to work that day, and I just couldn't shake this feeling. Like, I didn't know what to do. I was, what? I don't know. Something was off. Something was weird. And I wish I knew, obviously. But, so I'm laying in bed trying to just get through the day, and like, I didn't know what to do with myself. And then I have this impending sense of doom, like this sick feeling of dread. And then all of a sudden my phone rings and it's Christian. And he's like, Toni, are you sitting down? It's Christian. And I was like, what? What do you mean? And at this point, I'm not even realizing who it is, right? Because I know a couple Christians, and I'm like, what? What do you mean? Yeah, I'm sitting down. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, Toni, I'm sorry, but Joel's been shot and he's dead. And I was like, what? What? And then I just started screaming at him, and I'm like, no, you're lying to me. Why would you lie to me about something like that? Like, what is wrong with you? Why are you lying? And he's like, no, Toni, I'm so sorry. And he's crying, and he's like, I'm sorry. I wanted to call you before you heard it from somebody else, but he's gone. Joel's dead. I'm sorry. So I just fell to the floor on my knees from my bed, and I'm just, and then I felt like I was going to puke. So I crawled to the bathroom, I dry heaved for a little bit. And then I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I got to get down there. I just got to go. So I just went down to his house, and the cops had it taped off. There was a cop out there with a big shotgun. Because at this point, they didn't know where Joshua was, right? They didn't know what was happening. And I just remember thinking, if I run at that cop fast enough, I'll spook him and he'll shoot me and this will all be over. I just wanted to run at him and I just wanted to end it because my brain couldn't, I couldn't wrap my head around what was happening. Like, this isn't my son. There's no way this has just happened. I just wanted him to shoot me. In hindsight, like, he probably wouldn't have, but at that moment, I just couldn't fathom what was happening. And then I went into like this kind of weird state of denial. I was like, no, it wasn't Joel. It wasn't, there's no way that was my kid. They have it mistaken. You know, Christian couldn't tell. Maybe there was too much blood. I don't know. Like, it wasn't Joel. I got to go find him. You know, I got to go drive around and look for him. I don't know. So then I got through the next couple hours just pretending that it wasn't Joel. And then I went and sat at the cop shop parking lot for what felt like hours. And then finally a cop came out. And he's like, yeah, it was your son. It was Joel. And then I had to go tell my son, Travis, that Joel had been shot. And, you know, I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't know. It's not something you think you're ever going to have to tell your son. I was like, you know, it was an accident. Joel's been shot. And listening to him sob like that almost killed me. It was so, so hard to tell him. And then after that, I just went straight to the Fernie Hospital. And I said, please, I need something. You got to sedate me. I can't do this. Like, please sedate me. Like, obviously, they wouldn't. They just gave me some Ativan, but it was just so hard. And then, so they left Joel in the trailer alone. Well, not alone, but they had officers in and out investigating the scene of the crime. So Joel was in the trailer alone, slumped over with a bullet wound in the back of his neck for days. Well, it seemed like days. It was probably two or three. And I would just drive up there and park there, hoping some way he knew that I was there, because it was so hard for me to know that he was in there alone. And then the day that they were finally pulling him out, I was parked there waiting and waiting and waiting. And then they finally came and pulled him out, the funeral director and his son. And I was watching and they had him in a black bag and I could see rigor mortis had set in because his limbs were stiff. And then they put him in like a metal casket to load him into the back of the, I don't know if you'd call it a hearse or whatever, but it was a van to take him to the autopsy. And John, the funeral director, asked if I wanted to help lift the casket into the back of the van. So obviously I was like, yeah, of course I will. So I helped lift him in there, which is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. And then I just hugged the casket and I cried and I apologized and I just wanted to climb in there with him. Like, it's hard because I don't know where he is. Like, does he need me? Did he need me then? Like, it was really hard to let go of that casket. But eventually they were like, okay, Tony, we got to go. And they were all so nice and accommodating and understanding, but they had to leave. And it was so hard to let him go.
So as Tony stated, Chris was at Joel's home that day. Earlier in the day, he was inside the home working on Joel's dishwasher. He realized that he needed a part to finish the job, so he hopped on Amazon and ordered the part. Realizing he wasn't going to be able to fix the dishwasher without the part, Chris left Joel's house. Chris also wanted to get some work done on his truck that day, so he headed to his home across the way. On his way out, he saw Bryce, who was working on Joel's car. Here's Chris talking about his experience that day.
Oh, that morning, October the 11th, I was installing a dishwasher at his house for him when he got back from lunch, and everyone was drunk in the house. The other individual, Slim, there was asleep on the couch the whole time, and I tried fixing the dishwasher, but there was a part that was missing, so I showed him the part. We ordered it on Amazon. I told him it'll be here in 5 days. We'll finish the dishwasher. I've got to go finish working on my truck. I'll just be outside if you need me. He's like, can you just stay, get stoned with me, like, just hang out? I was like, no, man, I'll be outside if you need anything. And about 15 minutes went by, and there was a gunshot. And at first, I slowly gathered my tools because, you know, they were all drinking. Maybe someone got shot in the foot or someone just shot the wall or the floor, you know, dumb kid shit. And I get to the house, and they're stopping Bryce from entering the house. So I pushed through, and I blew the door open. But I ran in to see my little brother slumped over with blood leaking out of his mouth, sitting in a chair in the middle of his house. The bullet wound at the base of his skull. And they just ran. They didn't try and help him. They didn't, nothing. And I was on the phone with police at the time. And I just fucking lost it. It took everything in me not to kill that motherfucker where he stood. And it hurt because it took about an hour for the fucking police to even show up. And they didn't even try to resuscitate or anything. I know it's a bullet wound to the back of the head. There's not much they can do, but it just, it fucking hurt, man. The people that he thought he could trust the most, that were supposed to be his best friends, that were in that house that day. No one wants to talk about the truth. No one wants to blame my little brother. And the other is most likely dead. And I just worry that no justice is going to come out of this.
Okay, so to recap here a little bit and add some context, JP told Chris that Joel shot himself. So that's what Chris is referring to when he says, people are blaming my little brother. Chris also says that the other person is likely dead. And there he's referring to Joshua Freeman, who has been MIA since October 2023. And Chris thinks he may be deceased simply due to the amount of time that has passed, as well as a gut feeling. Finally, JP and Slim fled the scene with the gun, as well as some items from inside Joel's residence, including an unspecified amount of cash. Chris made a great point to us, asking if this was truly a self-inflicted gunshot, why would you take the time to pry the gun out of your so-called friend's dead hands?
Now, it's worth mentioning here that a few months before the shooting death, Joel's home was allegedly robbed and his elderly dog Eli was beaten. At this time, we cannot connect the two incidents. No one has been charged with that alleged robbery or in Joel's death at this point.
When it comes to Joshua Slim Freeman, not much is known publicly about this guy. Initially, police didn't even share his full name and referred to him just as Slim in their press releases. What is known is that he was with Joel on the day of Joel's death and had been staying in Joel's trailer for some time before October 11th, 2023. The exact nature of their relationship has not been made clear by law enforcement at this stage. Joshua Freeman fled the scene of Joel's death and made his way to Kimberley, British Columbia, which is about a 1 hour, 40-minute drive away from Sparwood. Joshua Slim Freeman was last seen on CCTV footage in Kimberley the day after Joel's death and has remained elusive since then. We asked Tony what she knew about Slim.
So nobody knew his real name around here. Like, he didn't even tell Joel his real name, as far as I know. Like, he was very secretive, I guess. I don't know. But they talked to me fairly soon, the investigator out of Kelowna, about seeking his identity, and they put something on the news. They put, you know, his picture. Because he was dropped off to Kimberley the day of the shooting. So the only picture they had was the footage, or the picture of the convenience store security camera.
We wanted to know what, if anything, Tony had learned about this man in the months after Joel was shot. Here's what she had to say. Again, everything Tony says in this clip is based on tips she has received from anonymous individuals and is all alleged.
I've had countless messages from people, now that his real name is out, countless messages, and a lot are from females saying that he's just a piece of shit. Like, he's, one girl said she had to take his dog because he was beating it. Another girl said that he had robbed her daughter. Another girl said he beat her years ago. Like, he's just, oh, another girl said he robbed her friend at gunpoint. Yeah. So I'm getting all these messages coming in. And of course, I'm sending it to the investigator, right? Like, look at what these people are saying.
As we've already established, Joshua Slim Freeman was not the only other person present in the trailer at the time the gun went off. JP was also there, and according to Chris, he was allegedly quite intoxicated when he saw him shortly before the incident. According to the press release and media reports, a man was arrested, questioned, and released without charge. We have been told that this man was JP. He has since lawyered up, as is his right, and has been uncooperative with law enforcement and Joel's family. Both Tony and Chris believe that JP is the key to getting answers about what really went down on October 11th, 2023. Here's Tony talking about JP's behavior after her son died.
Released because it's Canada. And he lawyered up immediately. He's been very aloof with the investigator, making it very difficult for them. It's very frustrating because people think, oh, release without charges. He's innocent. No, it's not how it works.
We're now going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, we're going to hear more from Tony and Chris concerning the investigation, the impact Joel's death has had on them, as well as their message to the two men who were in the trailer that day.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So as we've mentioned throughout the episode, the investigation into Joel's death is still in its infancy in the grand scheme of things. However, it has likely felt like an eternity to anyone who knew Joel or cared about Joel. We do know that this investigation is now being led by the BC RCMP Southeast District Major Crimes Unit. We did reach out to the RCMP for a statement, but they let us know that they'd be unable to participate at this time, which is totally understandable. We would much rather that the investigators be able to build a thorough case than to provide a statement to a podcast. While the RCMP have been quiet about their investigation thus far, we imagine things have been pretty difficult for several reasons. The first being that Joshua Freeman, or Slim, has fled and has remained at large since October of 2023. He has now been MIA for 6 months. It's unknown if he's even alive at this point or in the country. Secondly, JP, since initially being arrested and questioned, is now not really cooperating with the investigation. So investigators now need to assemble their case using warrants for various pieces of evidence, which of course takes time. We wanted to hear about Tony's experience with the investigators, and here's what she had to say.
Yeah, honestly, at first, I was a little frustrated at how slow I felt it was going, but I think that's just the way it goes. And he's actually been quite communicative with me, and he calls a lot. He sends a lot of emails. Like, honestly, I'm pretty happy with the investigator himself.
We're always super happy to hear positive feedback about the police work being done in cases when speaking to family members. As our listeners are likely aware, that isn't always the case. Next, Tony gave us a brief insight as to where they are right now with the investigation.
We're waiting on forensics and camera footage and cell phone records, and all that stuff takes time. They had to extend the search warrant or whatever you call it.
Now, of course, with any homicide or missing persons case, especially one where police have kept details at a minimum, the public starts to speculate and the rumor mill festers. But according to both Tony and Chris, there has been one disturbing rumor that has come up with regularity that they both want to vehemently deny. That rumor being that Joel ended his own life, either through suicide or accident. Here's Tony and then Chris with more on that.
The only thing that I've heard is that trying to spin the narrative that Joel did it to himself, which, how would you do that? And, you know, the evidence doesn't lie. I'm like, and then why would you leave with the gun if he did it to himself? You know, if you're sitting in a room and your friend blows his brains out, your first thing you're going to do is call 911 or try to stop the bleeding or whatever. But he just left. So if that doesn't scream guilt, I don't know what does. And I know the type of person he is and his character. He would never do that to me or his brother, especially with what we went through with my mom dying just 13 months prior. There is not a chance. And not only that, his dog was right there. Remember the dog that he treats like a child. Would anybody do that in front of their child? Absolutely not. You never would. So, and I knew that he would never do that in front of Eli. There's not a chance. And just, I mean, the placement of the bullet wound and everything, it's just...
I'd like to clear up that there's, like, no one truly knows what happened other than the three people that were in that house. One of them's dead. One of them's not. No one's found him. And the other one's a scared child that wants to blame it all on the deceased. And I hate hearing the horrendous accusations that it was a hit, that he had it coming because of the life he lived, that he did it to himself. Joel did not do this himself.
So as you heard earlier in this episode, Chris once struggled with substance misuse, specifically heroin use. As is common for those recovering, there can be a hesitancy around using prescription medication for pain, sleep, or emotional regulation due to the fear of becoming dependent again. Chris shared with us a little about the impact that being present at the time of Joel's death has had on him and how his life has changed since.
I've never been one to take medicines or pills, and currently, because of the PTSD and the fact that I can't sleep at night, I'm on 12 different pills 3 times a day just to cope. And it's disgusting. You need to get some sort of justice so that the truth comes out, because it just breaks my heart. This was a very happy, bright young boy. He hadn't quite become a man yet. He didn't get the chance to realize the mistakes he was making in life. He was taken from his mother far too young, his brother, and his baby sister. And I'm tired of hearing the bullshit rumors. Let the family be. Let the police do their justice, if they do. And let a mother have some rest. It's just not fair, and it sucks. It's pretty much destroyed me and Bryce. No one's perfect, and no one has good days all the time. And it was nice to be able to go to your little buddy and just fucking sometimes not even talk about it. Just sit there. And he understood. He was a very bright light. I miss every day just seeing him walk his dog. Actually, not even just us, everyone in the park. Everyone's kids, they all loved him. Everyone loved him. He was such a nice guy. Barbecues on the back deck all summer. Fire pit going all night in the summer, just loving life. And it was hard. 2 days ago on Sunday, I had to put his dog Eli down because he just couldn't live without him anymore. He just gave up. It's affected a lot of people really hard.
In a November 2023 interview, Toni told Global News that she will never be the same after what happened to her son. Here's what she told us when we asked her about the impact that this has had on her and her family.
Well, I can only mostly speak for myself, but I'm never going to be the same. There's just a hole in my heart. It's never going to be repaired. My son, he's never going to be the same. So I have to step up and take the role of the caretaker, and it's just not fair. As far as the community goes, I don't even know. I mean, and we live in such a small town. It's like, what are the chances of a shooting death in Sparwood and it be my son? Like, what are the chances of that, you know? So that's been really hard to swallow. Hard pill to swallow there.
On October 18th, 2023, 7 days after Joel's life was taken from him, a celebration of life was held at the Cherished Memories Serenity Chapel in Fernie, British Columbia. From what we are told, the service was packed. Chris told us a little bit more about Joel's funeral.
It was beautiful. I loved it, but there was a lot of people that me and his mother felt shouldn't have been there. He wouldn't have wanted to see there, that we felt were only there, I don't know, to justify something in their head. There was not many people were truly there for him the way he was for everyone else. And it broke my heart, and it shows volumes. Like, none of the kids, pretty much, that he went to school with, maybe a handful of them were there. It's really hard. It was beautiful, though.
No arrests or charges have been made in connection with Joel Zimbalati's death. And as such, there are at least two people out there who have the information that countless people desperately need in order to move forward in their lives. We know that there's a good chance that people who have answers to Tony, Chris, and law enforcement's questions are listening to this episode as we speak. And to those people, there's a simple and straightforward message.
At the end of the day, it's a fucking manslaughter. It's an accidental homicide. This is Canada. You'll be out before your 30th fucking birthday. Like, just own up and tell the truth so that a mother can understand what truly happened to her son. I'd rather some sort of justice come for my little brother. Anything. I'd rather his little brother not go to school and hear the fucking whispers and the rumors. I want it all to be put to bed.
I'll never stop. I will never stop until I find out the truth. Until I'm 6 feet in the ground, I will never, ever stop. We're going to find out the truth no matter what. And I mean, just come clean. Just say what happened. You can't run from the truth forever. The truth eventually will come to light. And evidence doesn't lie, so.
We know for certain that the people connected to Joel's death aren't criminal masterminds and have more than likely told other individuals information about what happened inside that trailer. If you were one of those people, we implore you to stop protecting these individuals and do the right thing. Call the BC RCMP Southeast Major Crime Unit at 1-877-987-8477. Or if you need to remain anonymous, you can call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. Chris echoes the sentiment when we asked him how our listeners can help.
If they have seen Joshua, to call the RCMP, say something. If they've drank in with and he said something different than what he keeps fucking repeating like a broken record, they need to come forward. Because if somebody doesn't, then we're not going to get the justice we need. And a mother's going to die young of a broken heart, most likely. She doesn't have this in her, man. And it kills to see.
And here's Tony with more about how you can help.
By coming forward with any information they have, no matter how small it seems, no matter how insignificant, you know, if has said something or if Josh had said something to them, anything, just come forward with it.
Before concluding our conversations with both Tony and Chris, we invited them to share any additional thoughts or favorite memories they had of Joel Zimbalati that they wanted us and our listeners to hear.
Oh, some of my favorite memories with him they're not for the public to hear. He was such an amazing light. He, no matter how hard his day was, no matter how sad he was, he made sure everyone was still happy, no matter what. He lost his best friend in his whole world, his grandmother. And even through that pain, he didn't falter. He was there every step of the way for his mother. And he really grew up when it happened. And he was just so positive all the time. You know, young kid, he was too innocent, he wanted to believe you just were good because you liked him. And wound up biting him in the ass, trusting everyone.
Joel was, and I know people say this about everybody after they die, like, oh, he was such a great person. He would give you the shirt off his back. But Joel actually was like that. You can ask any one of his friends and they'll say the exact same thing. He loved to make people laugh. He always had these crazy stories. And, you know, just the way he told it, you just couldn't help but laugh at him. And he just had so much love for us.
RCMP have not disclosed a physical description of Joshua Slim Freeman, but they have released a still image of him from CCTV footage. He looks to be a white male in his 20s or 30s, and judging by his nickname, we'd assume he's of slim build. He is known to have ties around the Okanagan area, so he could be anywhere in the Okanagan, or really in Canada at this juncture. Staff Sergeant Jason Smart said the following in an RCMP release. Mr. Freeman is believed to be one of the last people to see Mr. Zimbalati alive before he was shot, and it is imperative that investigators speak with Mr. Freeman regarding this investigation. If Mr. Freeman sees or hears this, we asked him to contact the police of jurisdiction. We will, of course, be sharing the still image of Slim on our social media pages for our audience to look at. If you see Joshua Freeman, you are asked not to approach him, but to instead call your local police. For those with information about Joshua Freeman, or JP, you are asked to call the BC RCMP Southeast District Major Crime Unit information line at 1-877-987-8477 and reference case number 2023-3312.
We would like to extend our gratitude to Tony and Chris for trusting us with Joel's story. And as always, we would like to thank you for listening to this episode of True North True Crime. Please share this episode and share the wanted poster of Joshua Slim Freeman. Let's help bring Joel's loved ones the answers and the justice that they deserve. We will see you soon for a new episode. So until then, stay safe, everyone.
Stay safe.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.